Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. On last week's program, I showed you that over many centuries, European man evolved a mode of life that involved living off the land, as did many other races and peoples. But the Jews, on the other hand, evolved into a mode of life that involved living off those who lived off the land. And I put forward the thesis that there is a name for the relationship between Jews and people like us. That name is parasitism. It's a biological term. There are many examples of parasitic relationships, of relationships between parasites and their hosts in nature, including parasites that are closely related to their hosts. In fact, parasites can be found among almost every kind of living being that exists. So it should hardly be surprising that a human group has evolved to fill the parasitic niche. How could such a parasite-host relationship have begun? Why did so few human races evolve to be parasitic? We only know of two such races, the Gypsies and the Jews. The Irish travelers are as yet just a subrace, which may have split off from their parent group just 1 or 2 thousand years ago. And in them, we may be witnessing the birth of a new and arguably parasitic race. These peculiar races' earliest beginnings may have been as simple as a greater degree of nomadic instinct, the inner psychological urge to move on among the groups that became parasites. And it also likely involved a difference in the kind of nomadic instinct they possessed. All human groups, all races, so far as we know, had nomadic beginnings as primitive hunter-gatherers. As the seasons or the climate changed, as their favorite food plants or animal herds were depleted or migrated, these ancient tribes had to be on the move. Indeed, the urge to move and to spread one's kind over a wider area of the earth is basic to almost all creatures, even including the plants and fungi, which one normally considers to be stationary. But it is clear that the eventual response of the European race, our race, and most other races, to the agricultural revolution, to the ability to farm crops and thus support much larger groups in fixed areas of the earth, like cities, was to establish hierarchical and increasingly advanced societies defined by 1, borders, and 2, a social and psychological and emotional attachment to the land or country defined by those borders, and 3, an allegiance to one's countrymen, who were also one's very close genetic kin. The nations founded by the European race did at times expand, of course. They expanded by conquest of their European neighbors, in which case the result was a new nation of more or less closely related Europeans. Or they expanded by conquest of alien peoples, in which case the result was either an ephemeral multiracial empire like Alexander's or the Soviet Union, which in the long-term view usually divided into its constituent nations in little more time than it takes for the dew to disappear from a mountain laurel in the blazing summer sun. Or the conquerors mixed their blood with that of the conquered, in which case they effectively exterminated themselves and ceased being members of our race, except in some cases there was a small remnant, as in Central America. The nations founded by our people also expanded by conquest of empty or nearly empty lands, creating European colonies in the true sense of that word, as in North America and Australasia, which in due course became white European nations. I believe that our European nomadic instinct, to the extent that we still have one, has evolved into what Dr. William Pierce called the Faustian urge, the urge to find new lands and also new frontiers of knowledge, to always seek out the distant horizon, to explore and discover unknown territory, to escape the old and the ossified and the restrictive, and found new nations, preferably where no man has set foot before. How different the behavior of the Jews. They founded no nations, despite the largely mythical Land of Israel stories in their Torah. And their endless wanderings are never into new frontiers, where unknown fields and forests and mountains beckon. No, indeed. What beckons to the wandering Jews is a group of fresh victims, not yet wise to the ways of the parasite. Although their scriptures can't be relied upon to be historically accurate, they are psychologically very revealing. In the Jews' own Torah, we see them ingratiating themselves with Egyptian leaders, becoming their spiritual and economic advisors and czars of agriculture, monopolizing the crop of grain and impoverishing those who actually did the farming. We see them becoming hated there, and the Egyptians placing restrictions on their parasitic behavior and requiring them to work for their bread. This the Jews regarded as slavery. After trying to get revenge on their hosts by bringing plagues and attempting to murder the next generation of young male Egyptians, in their mythical Bible stories, they wildly exaggerated and mythologized their actions and fobbed off responsibility for these deeds on their tribal god, Yahweh. Well, after all this, the Jews are forced to flee. And where do they seek to go? Not to new territories, where they may plow their own fields and build their own cities. No, indeed. Instead, they sought out a land of milk and honey, where they would eat of bread that others had made, where they would enjoy fine homes and great cities and wine and all manner of luxuries, which had been created by others, and where they would slaughter any men who resisted their claims and take the children and women as their sexual slaves. Read their own holy words. In the book of Deuteronomy, we read that, quote, "All the people of the earth shall see that you, the Jews, are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. For the Lord your God will bless you as he promised you, and you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And you shall rule over many nations, but they shall not rule over you." Close quote. The Jews' book of Genesis states, quote, "May God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you." Close quote. The Jewish tribal god Yahweh, sometimes called Jehovah, promises to Jews, quote, "to give you with great and goodly cities, which you did not build, and houses full of all good things, which you did not fill, and cisterns hewn out, which you did not hew, and vineyards and olive trees, which you did not plant." Close quote. In the book of Isaiah, the parasitism as divine destiny idea is emphasized again. Quote, "Foreigners shall build up your walls, and their kings shall minister to you. For the nation and kingdom that will not serve you shall perish. The sons of those who oppressed you shall come bending low to you, and all who despised you shall bow down at your feet. Aliens shall stand and feed your flocks. Foreigners shall be your plowmen and vine dressers. You shall eat the wealth of the nations, and in their riches you shall glory." Close quote. In their book of Joshua, the Jewish deity is made to say to the Jews, quote, "I will give you a land on which you had not labored, and cities which you had not built, and you dwell therein. You eat the fruits of vineyards and olive yards which you did not plant." Close quote. Certain parasitic behavior patterns, such as the lending of money at interest, have continued to the present day. Jewish money lending has today metastasized into the massive fraud of fractional reserve banking. Interestingly, in the Jews' book of Deuteronomy, Yahweh tells the Jews that lending at interest is only to be done to non-Jews. Quote, "You shall not lend upon interest to your brother. Interest on money, interest on victuals, interest on anything that is lent for interest. To a foreigner, that is, a non-Jew, you may lend upon interest, but to your brother you shall not lend upon interest." Close quote. In the same Jewish scripture, we find Yahweh exhorting his chosen parasites to force other peoples to work for them. Quote, "When you draw near a city to fight against it, offer terms of peace to it. And if the answer to you is peace and it opens to you, then all the people who are found in it shall do forced labor for you and shall serve you." Close quote. However, a non-Jewish nation which refuses to work for free for the Jews should, according to Yahweh, have all its adult males killed and its women and children taken by the Jews as, quote, "booty for yourselves," close quote. Quote, "But if it makes no peace with you, but makes war against you, then you shall besiege it. And when the Lord your God gives it into your hand, you shall put all its males to the sword. But the women and the little ones, the cattle, and everything else in the city, all its spoil, you shall take as booty for yourselves. You shall enjoy the spoil of your enemies, which the Lord your God has given you." Close quote. Slightly different advice is given by Yahweh when it comes to the lands which will be permanently occupied by Jews. Here the usual parasitism is discarded and replaced by out-and-out genocide. Perhaps the authors felt that the directly dispossessed should be directly murdered en masse, because if left alive, they would be a perpetual source of rebellion in their former lands. Quote, "But in the cities of these peoples that the Lord your God give you for an inheritance, you shall save alive nothing that breathes, but you shall utterly destroy them." Close quote. Without doubt, these words are a clear and direct religious warrant for genocide, a moral precursor to the current worldwide Jewish program to exterminate the European race. Is there any other religion but Judaism that posits as divine the parasitic behavior cited above. Jewish parasitic behavior is of long standing. It existed as soon as they appear in the annals of history, long before any putative admixture with Khazars. It is essentially a biological problem, and not a religious one, though the myths of their religion tell a true tale of their inner mental nature, even though the myths themselves are not literally true. All it took for the Jews to evolve into a highly specialized parasite was to take that first step into depending on other people's societies for their sustenance. Natural selection took care of the rest. And all it took to make that first step was a disinclination to accept the settled life made possible by the agricultural revolution, and perhaps a streak of laziness and cowardice that made them equally disinclined to conquer either other peoples or wilderness frontiers. All their trickery, mimicry, deception, and confidence rackets writ large followed as a natural consequence. And they have become very, very good at what they do. Parasitism is as ugly and disgusting as it can be terrifying. The blood-gorged and infected tick on the milk-white neck of a tiny child. The parasitic ant that saws off the head of the queen and then impersonates her. The disgusting tapeworm that wastes and starves its innocent victim. The parasitic fungus that takes control of an ant's brain, compels him to climb up to the top of a tree or other plant, and then explodes his head so that the reproductive organs of the fungus may spread the fungus spores far and wide. Parasitic behavior is not pretty. It is often disturbing, far more disturbing than the most frightening horror story or film that has ever been created. But it is a reality which must be faced and overcome if our children and everything we care about in this universe are to survive. On next week's show, I will illustrate my case for the parasitic explanation of Jewish evolution with many examples from nature that parallel Jewish behavior. Be with us again next week as we present the next part of this series, It's All Biological, Part 3, right here on American Dissident Voices. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. Remember to visit natall.com/music. That's natall.com/music. For the 20th anniversary CD of the most powerful pro-white music ever produced, Dresden's Call of the Blood. You can get your copy of this amazing professional production and superb recruiting tool for only $16 postpaid. Write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA, or visit natall.com/music to order online. The men and women of the National Alliance are looking for responsible, loyal white men and women to join us, increase our capabilities, and become part of our intentional white community in the beautiful Appalachian Mountains. Visit natall.com/join. That's N-A-T-A-L-L. ALL.com/join for further information. Once again, our postal address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth.